Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 49, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. Today, we're talking about why some students may be gifted, but they're flying under the radar, why teaching makes us smarter, and it could make your students smarter as well. And there are still so many unanswered questions about the superintendent in New Jersey that went number two on the school track. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through stories. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, we chat with a teacher that shows us the best teacher appreciation gift doesn't have to cost a thing. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Russ actually has the day off, but it's really not about Russ this week because it's Teacher Appreciation Week, and Russ is a data expert, but he's not a teacher. You're our resident teacher, so happy Teacher Appreciation Week.
Thanks.
I always kind of say it's like Earth Day, you know? It's like every day is Earth Day.
Yeah, every day should be. Yeah.
Teacher Appreciation Day, right?
It's weird because the schools are... All the schools choose their own week for Teacher Appreciation Week, even though this is nationally Teacher Appreciation Week. But then our schools aren't celebrating it this week. They've already celebrated it. So it's kind of like, oh.
I'm laughing because back at the TV station, they would always do, there's like a heart health awareness, like wear red. Is that heart? That's heart, right?
Yeah.
And then the sales department would go and like sell it to somebody when it wasn't lined up with the national.
Right.
And then so like we've got all our anchors wearing red and it doesn't match up because it was sold. And I was like, this is what's wrong.
Yes. But we appreciate being appreciated no matter when it is.
Right. Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and just jump into the teacher's lounge. I know, a lot of people don't know this about you. You have a master's in gifted education. Is that
right? I do.
And this story lines up right in your wheelhouse.
Yes, I am speaking about a book called Twice Exceptional by Scott Kaufman. It's a very interesting book and kind of a concept that some people just don't ever even consider. And so he's kind of trying to raise awareness. He's a psychologist. Basically, it's the idea that we think that children that are gifted, they're just gifted. They're just super smart, super great students, super everything. And it's not true. You know, usually, and what his book completely dives deep into is that sometimes when there are children that are gifted and they're actually not even recognized as gifted because they usually have some other type of symptom of disability or something, maybe they suffer from extreme anxiety, which is pretty common.
So you're saying that the kid that's like, you know, with the letter jacket and gets good grades and just seems like the all-American kid and is well-spoken.
That would be your typical gifted child, but there's more atypical gifted children.
Hmm.
And a lot of those children are not even screened because a lot of, you know, you may not know, but gifted to be... tested into the gifted program in most schools, it's done by teacher recommendation. They ask for the teachers to say, yeah, you should screen, because you can't screen every single child. Now, of course, as someone with a master's in gifted ed, I say, well, why not? Well, why can't we? We should.
Yeah, you're basically saying
you should.
Our biases might be getting in the way of recognizing these.
There is a huge bias. There's not as many African American children that are in gifted studies programs. And they say that possibly it's because they're not identified by the teacher and the teacher's not identifying them because she just doesn't understand. But this book talks about some, and it would be wonderful for teachers to read, whether you're a gifted teacher or whether you're someone that, you know, submits names to be screened for gifted education, because there are things that you can see, like, for example, a lot of students that are gifted have ADHD. A lot of students that are gifted may have, they may struggle in math, or they may be exceptional in math and struggle in language. I had a student that was an exceptional math student, but he was dyslexic, but he was gifted. Mm-hmm. So when you have a child that struggles reading and you screen for gifted, a lot of states screen for gifted education in second grade. So that's, where reading, you start to notice children that are flying high with reading and some that are lagging behind. So this student that comes to mind, such a bright child, and I taught him when he was in middle school, will do great things one day, probably in the world of engineering, seriously. Mm-hmm. But he was dyslexic. So he always was a struggling student in the language arts, reading, comprehension, phonics. But he is probably the most gifted child I've ever felt that I have taught. But he wouldn't have, I don't think he was in the gifted programs.
No teacher would nominate him, so to speak.
No, because when you're looking at him as a second grader, I was looking at him as a seventh grader, but when you're looking at him as a second grader, he's a struggling learner and he probably seemed disinterested in a lot of things but it was because he was dyslexic. So he was screened and he was screened for dyslexia, but he would have never been considered for the gifted program.
Well, I mean, how long is the screening process for gifted education? Why not every student? Is that just the time?
Well, you have to be tested by a psychometrist. And so a lot of schools districts only employ a few psychometrists for the whole district. Right. And so there's two assessments. Now, this may be different per state, but there's two different assessments that can be given to a child to be screened for gifted education. And one can be a little more nonverbal than the other, but it's basically an IQ test. Different states recognize gifted education differently. Mm-hmm. Some people, mostly it's based on IQ. Unfortunately, as an art teacher and a gifted teacher, or I don't like to say gifted teacher, I'm a teacher of the gifted.
You're too self-serving.
I know. Well, it's like, I don't like to call myself an artist. I like to call myself an art teacher. But, anyway. So I do feel, and I think every state would probably back me on this, that the area of gifted intelligence that is not as recognized is creativity. That is what seems, and it's hard to measure, hard to test, but it does seem to be those children are the ones that I feel like are underserved. You may have somebody with a super high IQ, but they may have social anxiety and they may have dysgraphia. There's a lot of really verbal children that are very smart and verbal, but they struggle with just norms and societal constraints. And so those children would test into your gifted programs, yes, but they may not get as much out of the gifted program as another child. So what do you do as a parent? Okay.
Yeah,
so here's, I am also a parent and I think I'm a good one, but you have to advocate for your children. So you need to know as a parent that if your child is not tagged to be screened for the gifted program, you have the right as a parent to ask for them to be screened.
Okay.
Number one.
And the school has to comply?
They should, yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you have a child that you strongly feel is gifted and they were given a gifted assessment and they did not pass, you have the right as a parent to ask for the alternate assessment to be given.
Okay.
Especially if they were submitted by the teacher.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do well because everybody's different. And so, I know with my time in the gifted field, there are children that have not passed the screening for Form A, but they're given Form B, which may be a little more verbal versus nonverbal, and they pass. So that's two big things that parents need to know. But also, if your child doesn't make it into the gifted studies area, that is not the end of their gifted education. There are so many extracurricular things. There are robotics teams. There are robotics clubs. There are, math clubs and teams that you can be involved in. Art, after-school art, those things that are, of course we have after-school sports and athletics and dance. Those things are alive and well. But some of the gifted areas that if you notice that your child has a gift in something, you need to sign them up for a piano class and just see. I have to say my older son, you know, I knew he was a gifted little guy. I mean, he was just different in certain areas and then confusing in other areas. Well, I finally took him to play guitar and learned very quickly when the guitar teacher looked at me and said, he already knows how to play guitar, which, I mean, low key, I was upset because I played piano my entire life and was very talented at piano, but I wanted to play guitar. And for some strange reason, now I don't know how to read music, but I knew how to play piano.
Right.
But I want to know how to play guitar. And so, and it was so hard for me. Yet my son, you know, picked up guitar immediately. And
maybe he gets it from his dad.
No.
No. Okay. So it's not that funny.
But
bad for him.
But it is funny because I would tell my son, you're so talented, you don't even know it. He takes it for granted. Mm-hmm. A lot of times gifted children, they're gifted in an area and it just comes so naturally to them that they didn't have to work at it. But then there will be something that your gifted learner has to work at, and whatever, they will have extreme focus with it. And that's what you need to definitely pursue after school for them. You know, because there's so many different ways to be gifted, for sure.
This whole story, this is a book, but it popped up in NPR recently. I mean, is this new research, or is this just something that has kind of bubbled back up to the surface?
Well, Scott Kaufman's book, it's called Twice Exceptional. He says he really started to try to put awareness out there because he is someone that he calls himself twice exceptional, you know, where he has a gift, but he also has a shortcoming, you know, in his mind. You know, I don't like to say anybody has a shortcoming, but, you know, he would be more atypical. So, no, I think that there are some misconceptions out there, Nick. I really do think that people just think, my child has straight A's. They should be in the gifted program. Why are they not in the gifted program? You know, just because you're a great student doesn't mean that you have some of these other tendencies. But also, if you are a great, you know, you will have students that are, this is a battle that we have in school districts. There are teachers, regular teachers, that get agitated because they have a child in their class that is a low performing student.
Yeah, maybe behaves
usually
badly.
Male, yes. And then
he gets the gifted stamp.
Goes, yes. And then he goes once a week to this gifted class and he's just missing his regular class and he's going to the gifted class and then he's doing nothing in the classroom. So that is frustrating.
I think you have to quit looking at being gifted as advanced placement.
No,
it's not.
It's not.
It's different.
It's where their mind is being stimulated in a way that works for their mind. And clearly whatever's going on in the regular classroom isn't ringing their bell, you know?
Right.
But they still deserve to be stimulated in some way. And hopefully it will inspire and invoke them to go back to their regular class and take an interest in something like, you know what, I really love engineering. I really love building and creating. But you know what? I'll never make it far in engineering if I don't buckle down with math. And so then maybe it inspires. So it is, you're right. It's not a stamp of, they're better. They're not. No, they're different.
Yeah.
You know, they learn in a different way and we're going to try to help them learn in that way, but they're still going to be in the mainstream also. And if your child doesn't screen into the gifted program, even though sometimes those things seem fun and different that they're doing, you can still implement your child's learning with those things after school.
Right. Well, definitely a good topic and good to keep in the forefront of your mind if you're a teacher, because, you know, you need to recognize these students and try to pick them out, since most school districts really don't have the resources to just test everybody, which would be great. But
that would be great.
So I don't know about you, but there's not a doubt in my mind that I learn better when I teach somebody something. Do you agree?
I agree.
There's now a new study in applied cognitive psychology, some researchers there, and they basically are like, we now have the data to back this up. And they split up a bunch of students into different groups, taught all the students the Doppler effect, and then what they did after they taught them the Doppler effect varied. You know, one group had to come up and teach without notes what they learned. Another group just did math. And then another group taught with notes. And they basically found the two groups that taught both with notes and just kind of off of memory and kind of had to do this extemporaneously, both performed way better when they were tested on the Doppler effect. I think it was a week or 2 weeks later. And it basically says the requirement of teaching makes you retain that knowledge. I bring this up because, one, good for teachers because they're probably getting that much smarter every day.
We're so smart, right. But we don't do as well on Jeopardy. Right. It's the recall.
But second, it kind of makes you wonder, like, do we need to be having students get up in front of the class and teach more?
Yes. And I think that that is happening in schools. And I do think, I think it's great that there's now data to back it up. But right. I do think that, you know, there's lots of reasons to have children learn something and then present it to their class. Basically, it takes the focus off of a direct instruction with the teacher, you know, just pouring out knowledge to the children. Also, you'll always find that children find things to be relevant that makes an impact on the students more than the teacher would, just because they're closer to the pulse of what the other kids are going to think this is interesting, you know, whereas the teacher might be like, meh, you know, that's not important. I'm going to get to this. But sometimes it's the spark that creates the interest. And so, but also it is important for the students to know also the pressure of, okay, I'm about to get up and teach this and somebody's going to ask me a question that I may or may not know the answer to. So let me know as much as I can before I put myself in that situation.
That's funny you say that. And one of the flaws in the study that somebody pointed out was they didn't have that interaction when they were teaching it. Like, for whatever reason, the way the environment was set up, they weren't being peppered with questions. But I think that would only further, you know, concrete what you've learned, you know, into your brain.
Yes, I know when I taught health once. I taught health once.
Well, I don't know if you want students to get back up.
I made them. Health. Well, I know. Well, hey, that was part of the plan. Well, some of those things are a little awkward and touchy, but but I did. It was on the drugs awareness section. Okay. So I thought, you know what? Let me let them go and learn about these drugs and the negative effects.
As we've learned, you know nothing about them.
I don't. So I don't want to be the stupid lady standing up there talking about things and they're like, she has no clue.
Yeah.
So I had them break apart and they, you know, they were able to choose their drug, research their drug, talk about the drug. But then I said that they had to have questions at the end. They had to poll the audience so that the audience was actively listening and able to answer questions at the end, but also that the students had to ask questions too. So I learned a ton through that, and the kids all learned, but I think, you know, they'll remember it. And that every child said, you know, I didn't intend to learn this much about nicotine, or I didn't intend to learn this much about LSD.
Right.
But once I started learning this, then it made me question this. So then I read this, and then I went to this website, and then I learned this. And, you know, so that it really does. It's a great teaching tool, and I do think it is being used a lot, but I think it's great to have the data behind it to say, like, they're going to retain it. It's the recall. We all are active learners. We all get fed at the well with some new thing, but do you retain it later? You're going to retain something that you emotionally sat in front of a group of people and taught. You're going to retain it.
I don't know if you remember the interview we did with, it was Dr. Farber, the scientist, the zebrafish scientist.
Yes.
And when we asked him, one of our questions was, you know, which teacher changed your life? He pointed to the teacher that made him get up in front of the class and teach electricity.
And my fourth grade teacher knew I was a science nerd at some level. And she actually sent me home with these little science projects that were like kits.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked me to teach the class electricity. So in fourth grade, we built batteries that I actually taught my fourth grade class. And that teacher got me out of my shell. I wonder if I would be a scientist without her.
It changed his life, and it put him, in his mind, on a trajectory to now. I mean, where did he go? Like MIT, and like he went to all these Ivy League schools, and now he runs a zebrafish lab, one of the leading ones in the world at Carnegie Institute for Science. So
yeah, you know. And I mean, I think any of us listening, we can think of a time that we had to get up and present something, you know, if we were asked to. And I told my students in health, I said, you guys are gonna remember your report on LSD or tobacco, or you know, you're going to remember it for the rest of your life because you dug so deep into it, and then you had to get up and present this awkward topic to people, and you'll know it for life. You'll recall that.
So right after we got off the air, after we recorded last week, one of the most bizarre stories broke, And
oh my gosh, I feel like I know where you're going with this, and I never am in the know. Is this about the superintendent?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, it's so weird. It's so weird, and I was glad we didn't run with it, like, you know, immediately, because run with it. You'll see my pun later. Because sometimes, like, the media, like, just grips onto a headline, and then, like, the facts start to come out, and you realize the original headline doesn't really match up right with what the facts are. But we've now waited a week, I think 6-7 days, and there's still no understanding as to why this happened. So here's what happened, if you don't know what I'm talking about. A school district apparently was finding human feces on their school track repeatedly, like every day or every other day or whatever. So their school resource officers set up surveillance at the track to try to identify who was doing this. Turns out it was a school superintendent. Not the school superintendent, a superintendent of a neighboring district. I guess he lived nearby or whatever. But apparently he was running and using the bathroom on the track. And some might say, well, you know, if you run a lot of marathons, sometimes there's like a, there's kind of like a symptom that you get where you have to go and you have to go immediately.
Then run in your neighborhood.
Well, but still.
Then run around your house.
But it doesn't happen every day at the same spot. Like, this is getting weird. I looked up more articles today. It's like other answers. He's not making a comment. He's suspended with pay until, like, basically the end of the school year. I think they're going to try to navigate through this in the summertime. And there's just, we don't understand why he was doing this. Like, what was the motive? And it turns out there were 80 feet away from where he did it, there were porta potties. So many unanswered questions. This is a gentleman who, and for those that don't know, this took place in New Jersey, but this was a gentleman who was, I think, being paid, it was $130,000 a year. I don't see him being employed anywhere after this if he doesn't have a really good reason.
It's disturbing.
Yeah.
I mean, there are links to people that do things with feces. There are some dark links there, no pun intended there either, but there are some. That points to something bigger problem. But also, I just want to say, since Russ isn't here, I feel like this is something Russ would say, and it's definitely something I'm feeling. If this were a school teacher that was doing this every day on their morning run on a school district's track,
yeah,
it would not be handled in the summer. It would not be handled
this
quietly.
Is true. They'd be fired immediately.
They would be fired immediately. It would be all over. Oh, it would be. It would be all over everything. They would be coming out and speaking, and it makes me mad that. Oh well, let's just keep this quiet and no comment and whatever. You know, that would the school teacher would never be given that.
Right.
That bothers me.
I mean, here's just an article I'm reading. No one answered the door at his house in Aberdeen Saturday, other than a terse, "I have no comment" offer to a NewJersey.com reporter who approached him on Friday afternoon. He has issued no formal statement about the accusations.
Right. But, you know, if it were a teacher, they would be made to do it. Yeah, they would not. They would be dismissed without pay, without, you know, they would be made to go to a hearing. Like, that is what bothers me about this, but whatever. The officers that were staking out, and they were like, what?
I know. Somebody, some school resource officer identified who it was, and then he called his boss, the superintendent of his district, and was like,
"You're never going to believe who it is."
God.
Yes.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
Since it's Teacher Appreciation Week, we are going to go to the archives and actually pull up an interview that you and I did in episode number 3. This is 49, so 46 episodes back. I know we have a lot of new listeners, and this interview just fit.
Episode
3. Right. Yeah, this interview just fit perfectly. Probably the nicest person we've ever interviewed. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I can guess. I'm trying to, like, go back in my mind. Is this the one whose students wrote in all the nice things about him?
Yes, his name is Scott Olson.
I really liked him.
He was just like a genuinely nice guy.
Yes,
and so what he did was he posted on Facebook basically saying, like, you know, "Dear former students, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. I'd love to hear what you're doing now." And what the students are doing now and what they said was probably the best gift you could get as a teacher. Forget a Starbucks card. It's all about impact.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear it. And now it's time for our Bright Idea segment. Our guest in our Bright Idea segment this week is Scott Olson. Scott Olson is a teacher from Maryland, and he has probably received the best teacher appreciation gift I think any teacher can receive, and it all was done through Facebook. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
You know, I was stumbled across this story actually in the Baltimore Sun, and it happened during Teacher Appreciation Week, which I guess was 3-4 weeks ago. And why don't you tell the listeners exactly what you did on Facebook that made this so incredible?
You know, everyone always posts these things like share this if you have a nice teacher, or share that and things like that. And I wanted to do something a little different. And I'm friends with a lot of my former students. I've been teaching in Baltimore County for about 15 years. So I was curious as to how, you know, everyone's doing, because in Facebook land, it only tells you who that wants you to see and whatnot. And so I came across a fellow teacher's post, and it just basically said, you know, tell me something nice about you and your life and let me know what you're doing. And I really liked that. So I did that, and I expanded it a little bit. And I said, well, don't just tell me about you and your life, but also tell me something like a memory that you have from my class, maybe, and maybe, or another teacher. If you have another teacher that was your favorite teacher, you know, let me know about them and I can relay that information to them. And so I posted that up there, and immediately I had hundreds of responses.
And I'm going to cut you off for a second, because what people were saying was really incredible. I mean, I don't care who you are. I don't know your past students. I was going through and reading them, and it's emotional. I mean, let me let folks know like what one of them said. It said, well, out of all of it, and referring to time learning under you, I'm most appreciative of your friendship and for believing in me even when I didn't. I'm currently working for the One Love Foundation, providing educational tools for high school and college students about the difference between healthy and unhealthy relationship behaviors. I mean, when you read messages like that, what's going through your mind?
Oh man, I'm getting the chills just thinking about it right now, you know, just going over it again. It's so awesome and so powerful. I'm lucky that I teach a subject. I teach psychology. I teach AP psychology. And when I started it, it was only 16 kids. And now like 260 kids are taking it. And the nice thing about teaching a subject like that is that you can teach people how to be good people. And so I try to carry a lot of that into my lessons. You know, when we go over things about unconditional positive regard and things like that. And when a student writes something as powerful as that, then you finally feel like you've done something good in the world. And that was awesome.
I was shocked at how many people actually have become teachers. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, I did. Because I always joke around. I'm like, don't do it. Don't become a teacher. So I'm always like, and I say the same thing about like being a psychologist. I'm like, guys, it's a lot of school. But teaching is a good way to give back to your community. It's a really good way to help young people. And I wanted to do it when I reflected upon, you know, I had a few good, really good teachers in high school too, and how much they helped me through so many awkward stages. So that's what made me want to do it. So I'm sure that's what got them around to it too.
Yeah, you had another student say, your class inspired me to consider teaching as a profession, and it came in super handy for all my development psychology classes. So again, it was just like, it was really inspiring for me to see that you know, it was your positive attitude that really inspired folks to consider teaching at all.
And I think that's important. Like I tell my students, like right away in the beginning of the year, teaching psych, I say, you know, we're going to get to know each other really well, and you're going to get to know yourself really well. So I start off by telling them that we're all going to be, you know, personable and friendly, and that's what I'm looking for. And it's funny because I think a lot of new teachers, they're always told to be really tough in the beginning, you know, like rule with an iron fist and then get softer as time goes on. I don't like to do that at all. I like to do it as like a way of, I respect you as a human and you should respect me, and my only job is to make you better. And so that's all I want to do. I don't care if you take the AP exam at the end of the year. I just want you to learn life lessons and really know yourself and how to work with others.
What is one of your, you know, I know that this would be tough based that you have 300 comments, but is there any that you want to just talk about really quickly that kind of struck you in a certain way?
Some of the things that just blow my mind are how many people have even changed their careers. You know, they started off trying to make a lot of money, and then they, which is good, don't get me wrong, but then they moved on because they were more interested in helping others and doing something beyond just making money. There's one girl, Bridget, she had written about that. She had written about how she got her dream job, and then she realized it wasn't really a dream job. You know, it looks like that on paper, but when you finally get to it, she realized she wanted to do more stuff personally with people, and I thought that was really neat. Yeah. I thought that, you know, some of the things that the kids say, how they still use the stuff they learned from my class throughout all of college, was fantastic, because that means they're retaining the information, they're remembering it. To me, that's fantastic. Some of the kids have been to so many other countries. You know, one girl went to the Peace Corps for 2 years. She just came out of the Peace Corps for her second year, and I couldn't imagine the amount of work and energy she has to pour into that, plus the relationships that she's made are like the ones that I have with the kids. You know, you pour your life and heart into these things, and then you hope that they grow. And I know she's going to go through the same thing with all the people that she interacted with on the Peace Corps. Like, that's just amazing to me.
That's so awesome. I'm so excited for you and your students.
Yeah, and you know, Scott, I think you had a colleague, maybe a veteran colleague, and one of the students talked about them, but that person...
Oh, my gosh. That was the most amazing thing. Jeff, really, really good guy. He's taught so many people. He has students, ex-students who are like in their 50s now. Mm-hmm. And I told him about this one girl, Erica, and she had written about him. And I didn't teach her. Erica just knew me because, you know, I try to create a safe environment for all the kids. And so a lot of her and her friends came in and, you know, we talk and stuff. And she was Mr. Tarlow's teacher's aide her senior year. And she went on that Facebook and she was like, I loved Mr. Tarlow, wrote all these nice things. And when I told him about it, and he, you know, being an older teacher, being there for a really long time, you know, things weigh heavy on you. You're not in the best shape anymore. So his face lit up like a Christmas tree. Aww. When I mentioned her name, he was so happy. He actually started tearing up that she was writing these nice things, because I had to share it with him. And he doesn't really use social media very much. So when I showed it to him, he just couldn't take it. It was wonderful.
That's really cool. And, you know, it's all about like teacher appreciation. And I think a lot of parents or students will bring a gift of some type to a teacher during that week. But I would say this is way better than any gift you could possibly receive.
Yes. I'm sitting here thinking, I got a couple of candles and some lotion. Like, I'd really, now I want my students to say things to me. I have kids that I taught that are now done with college, and then some that aren't even in college yet. I want to hear from my students. I think this is such a great idea.
Yeah, it was really fun, and it's so neat to see where they are. And I love the fact that a lot of them are like, hey, I live there too. We should hang out. And they're making connections. They're actually networking on my post, to me is just really cool because they're all good people.
Yeah. Well, you helped them be that way.
Well, they had a lot of help from other teachers and parents too.
Well, look, Scott, I really appreciate you sharing the story with us. There's one thing we like to do with our guests, and I haven't told you this yet. We do a little pop quiz, and we always like to ask, because all of our guests are normally teachers or superintendents or principals, and we like to ask a little short list of questions. It's the same questions for every guest we have. Are you game for that?
Sure, why not?
All right. First question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should that be?
It should be mine. Psychology, of course.
What are we teaching, or what are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
I think that we really need to focus on maintaining good social relationships on top of our content. I worry about that a little bit with the upcoming rise of using technology all the time for everything. Not that I'm against technology. I use it all the time myself, but really making sure that school should be about building character and people as well as just knowing a subject.
What does every child deserve?
Well, obviously, they deserve a good, free public education, but they also deserve a very safe environment as well. I think a lot about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs and getting, you know, food, water, shelter, then you know, working from there, being safe, and then working from there, esteem issues and loving and belongingness, and then you can reach your self-actualization.
Biggest challenge for today's educators?
I think the hardest thing for a lot of teachers is they don't know what it's like until they get in the classroom. I wish that people could do their student teaching before they even took the classes, because I think a lot of times when you take your classes and you're like, okay, I've got this, and then the last year of your school, you do your student teaching, you're like, oh my God, now I have to do this because this is what I just spent the last 5 years of my life doing.
Best gift to give an educator? I know it's a little ironic after what we just discussed.
Well, hello.
It's one of my questions, you know, let's stick with the list.
Right. No, this was hands down the best gift, and actually this year, this has been a really good year for me because the kids have an award every year, and it's called the Wheeler Award at my school. It's for the principal. I think I won it this year for the 44th time, and it was so nice. The seniors give a gift to one of the teachers, and I got it this year. And I think teachers, if we could just be recognized a little bit more, instead of, you know, you normally have a problem with teacher, that's when you hear about them, you know, they complain. Think about the positivity. Think about actually going there and saying, you know what? principal, whatever, I want to tell you about this teacher's performance. This was an amazing lesson, or this was a really cool thing, and I'm so appreciative of them. That, to me, would be, that's awesome stuff.
What career path would you take if you couldn't be in education?
You know, that's so funny. Every teacher goes through this. They're always like, what else could I do if I wanted to do something else? I enjoy lots of different things. I enjoy woodworking and stuff, and I also really like to do, I work on my house, so I've always thought about contracting or flipping homes or something like that. But I don't think I could do it because I wouldn't be around kids. You know, I'm such a social creature now, so I don't know if I'd be able to do it.
What teacher changed your life?
I had a teacher for math for 3 years named Mr. Hibbard at New Milford High School. And Mr. Hibbard was just a great person. He was a great role model. He would tell me straight up if I did something wrong. He would also hide me if I did something wrong. And what was really great about it is I had him the last 3 years of high school. So I'm in his calculus class. And what was really cool was he had shared with me all these stories that we built up, and he was telling me about how his wife reacted to him, and I'm like, why does that matter? And then I found out she was my first grade teacher, and I was like, oh my gosh, wow. That is wild. So, and he had a little note and everything, how proud she was of me, how I grew and everything. I'm like, oh gosh, the heart's just getting pulled.
Yeah,
it was great.
No doubt. Do you buy your school lunch or do you bring your own?
I bring my own. I bring a nice hot lunch every day. I make extra dinner, and I always put it in there. I have a microwave in my room. The kids use it because, you know, I'm like that. I don't have any personal space, so we all have nice lunches.
That's right. What do you do in your planning period?
I plan. I actually, we have another AP Psych teacher, and the two of us work really well together. So I'm generally the creative mind, and she's the one that pulls the balloon string back down to earth so we can actually make good lessons.
Last question, pen or pencil?
That's a good question. In my subject area, we use both. So I prefer pencil because you can always make mistakes and erase them. So I like that.
Fair enough, Scott. Look, we really appreciate you taking the time to give us a ring. We love your story. That's why I wanted to get you on and just kind of talk to you about it.
Awesome.
And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye.
You too.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismissed. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortega. Go, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class dismissed.